Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast coming to you Sunday evening, Monday morning. There was not a lot of stuff going on this weekend, and usually in this spot, we have a couple different segments. We have the WCW Saturday Night Reviews that John and I do, and that's coming. We have that ready to go here. But then usually I have another segment that talks about something else that happened this weekend or any news or whatever. But with UFC going this past weekend, Bellator also went. There was some boxing on DAZN, but nothing wrestling related unless you were watching Friday night, Saturday morning's New Japan show. But it kind of leaves us with a little bit of a dearth of information. So instead, you'll just get a much shorter show today. And if you are a fan of the 1992 WCW Saturday Night Reviews that we do, that will be the bulk of the show. Just want to get a couple things out of the way, though. And I will have some audio of a show that I did with Big Dave Meltzer on Wrestling Observer Radio and Missy Hyatt. That was kind of fun to talk to Missy after being a fan for so long. I did actually get to meet her in Dallas in 2016 at WrestleMania 32 weekend. I saw Ed in San Antonio make a beeline towards her to go say hi, and I kind of piggybacked on Ed so that I could introduce myself and just say hi and appreciate her, let her know how much I appreciated her as a wrestling fan growing up. And so getting to interview her and talk to her was a lot of fun this weekend. So, but basically, the reason why I'm going to replay some of that audio, and don't worry, I already talked to Brian Alvarez at his Wrestling Observer Radio. I told him what I was going to do, and he was totally fine with me replaying this little piece of the show. But she was around in WCW 1992. In reading back the Observers, there's a little bit of a switch when Bill Watts fully comes in and starts making changes. One of the things that happens is that Missy is gone from TV. And I'm not sure how long she's gone. I'm not reading ahead in the Observers. We're watching the TV pretty much. I think this would be the show is, I think, July 25th. So today's July 26th, July 27th. So John and I are up to date with the TV as of this week in 1992, but I don't want to read ahead in the Observer because I don't want to, like, you know, I want to watch the stuff as I remember it, and also with a little bit of new eyes, because there's obviously stuff that I remember, and I'm sure I missed a handful of shows back then. But I did ask her some questions in the interview with Big Dave that related to this time period, and John and I had talked about a couple of these things a couple weeks ago. So I wanted to replay those here so that you could hear her answers to the two questions that I had relating to that time period before we go to John and I talking about the July 25th, 1992 show. So before I get there, I just want to mention a few things. So last week, on Wednesday morning, we put out the Rocky IV podcast, where we went over the entire movie, and I think so far, like, that's the movie that is, I don't want to say it's the favorite, because but I think there's a certain type of Rocky fan. There are Rocky fans who were born sort of right at the end of the 80s, early 90s, And Rocky IV was shown on TV so often if you had cable, which most people did, you know, by the early 90s. And so it became a movie that was just on TV all the time. And it's one that a lot of people really love. Now, you know, I'm a little bit older, so it's not necessarily my movie or my Rocky movie, but I get it because of the time and place, like the 80s, you know, right smack dab in the 80s, 1985, this movie comes out. And, you know, Stallone is a gigantic star. The movie is the highest grossing film in the history of the franchise. It's, I mean, it's a superhero film. It's Rocky, the superhero saving, you know, beating the Soviet Union. Like, I mean, that's essentially what it is. So that was really good. We got some good feedback on that. And this upcoming week, we will talk about Rocky V. Now, talk about a switch. You know, Doohan and I start that show basically by saying, you know, no matter what people think, and I think most people agree that it's probably the worst film in the franchise, but in being the worst film in the franchise, there is still so much to talk about. There is a reason why this film is not great. There are reasons, and we go over all of those reasons, including stuff with John Avildsen and stuff with Stallone and him bringing in his son Sage and just the time period thing. And, you know, from Rocky IV, I think the kid is probably 8 or 9, and by the time, you know, Rocky V starts, the kid ages like 4 years, like just in a few days. So we'll talk about that film. And, you know, the series is going really well. Appreciate all the feedback, getting, you know, people following the Instagram. I'm putting up some pretty cool pictures of the films, and I'm getting, you know, just people on Twitter and on Instagram reaching out to me. So it's great to see all of the Rocky fans that are still out there. And if you are, and you are listening, definitely hit us up, you know, Fight Game Media on Twitter, our Facebook group, which you can see the link to in our Twitter at Fight Game Media. Let us know what's going on, because, you know, this is a little bit of a labor of love for Doohan and I, just because we love these films. Like, you know, it's a lot of work and it's a big project. We're doing these like long marathon tapings on the weekends, but we get so much out of it just because, A, you know, we're friends and we like to chit chat with each other, but B, just a project in of itself. After we did the Fabulous Four several years ago, which you can find on our YouTube channel, like that was kind of like, how do you do a podcast project? We were still so early in the game with back then it was the Fight Game podcast, and I'm sorry, FGB Radio is what we called it. Right now it's Fight Game Podcast, but you know we created this different show, a series on Hearns and Leonard and Hagler and Duran, and we just went over every single one of those fights in detail, the beginning and the end and the fight itself. And it was hard. Like, it was much harder than we thought, I think, you know, just how much time it took us to get through all of those shows. And this was different. Like, we wanted to do them really weekly so that people could listen to them weekly and not really get interrupted, where all of a sudden, you know, oh, you know, we hit a lull and 3 weeks later, you know, the next episode comes on. We want these bam, bam, bam weekly so that there's a cadence and people, you know, people get used to that cadence. So definitely reach out if you have any feedback on those. It's been a blast to do. So before we get to the piece of the interview that I did that I'm going to replay with Missy Hyatt, I wanted to tell you about a new sponsor that we have, Deal Dash. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that the auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. So if you go ahead and buy now, Deal Dash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up and on top of their other discounts. So go to DealDash.com and use offer code FIGHTGAME or DealDash.com. deal.fm/fightgame. That's deal.fm/fightgame. Okay, so let's kick it off. First, you will hear the few questions I asked Missy Hyatt. Now, I'm just going to give you a heads up that the audio isn't as good as it will be when John joins. You know, with technology and things, it was a little hard to get Missy to use the technology that John and I use, which I've actually got Big Dave to start using, which has been great. But she couldn't get it to work, and so we had to use the old Skype to phone method, which definitely you'll be able to tell. But hopefully it's not too bad. And then once I get through that, then we will we'll bring John on to talk about the July 25th, 1992 episode. You know, this is probably going to be one of the shorter episodes in the history of the Fight Game podcast, but John and I will be back Thursday evening with our normal show, you know, where we break down all the news and we review the Wednesday night shows. And I'm really interested to see, you know, where NXT goes, because they really got their behinds handed to them Wednesday. I'm not even exactly sure why. I thought both shows were fun. Like AEW show is more fun to me generally, just because of the ambiance and the environment and the fan. This is the nature of what that show looks like. But NXT is, you know, my favorite style of wrestling, and you know, if it wasn't so WWE homogenous, I think I would like it even more. But they got their work cut out for them, because they, you know, they need to do some things, and you know, I hope that they start hot to take advantage of that lead in that they get. But you know, we'll be back with John at the end of the near the end of the week. But here is, first you're going to hear Missy and myself and Dave, and then after I'll bring on John and we will finish the show talking WCW Saturday Night. I'm actually rewatching the Watts WCW 92 era, because all the old Saturday nights are now on the WWE network. And right when Watts comes in, you've been on TV, and then Watts comes in and then we don't see you. And I know there's stuff with him and Heyman as well. Like when he came and he put his foot down and here's the new doctrine and this is what we're going to do. Like, what did he, like, did he communicate what your role was going to be?
No.
Or your role was going to change?
No, he didn't say anything to me. I just found out that I wasn't doing anything, you know. And I was just like, okay, you know, I go with the flow. You know, as long as I get my paycheck every week, I'll be, or every 2 weeks or whatever, I'll be happy. You know, and I remember, you know what he did? One year he gave at Christmas time all the talent some luggage that said World Championship Wrestling with the logo on it. You know, it was cheap luggage, but it was like a duffel bag and a hang-up bag. Everybody got it except me. And I showed up at the pay-per-view or whatever, and everybody had new luggage. And I was like, well, where's mine? There's none for you. Yeah.
Just one more 1992 WCW question, but You and Medusa had just done the bikini challenge, maybe even like a month before, and then Watts comes in and there's an obvious change in the TV, but when he came in, like, because I mean you knew the wrestling business, like, did you expect all of the changes that he made? Like, did you, like, when you heard he was coming in, like, it was going to be a drastic difference from Dusty, but did you anticipate all the stuff that he was trying to push before he had even come?
No, I just heard that he was there to save money. And I know that he said he was going to job people out until they quit or renegotiated their contracts. And I think he did that to Brian Pillman. I think he tried to do that to Brian Pillman.
Definitely did he? Brian Pillman.
Yeah, he said, and Brian was like, well, I'll be the highest paid jobber there is.
Yeah, he told Brian that you're not worth the contract that Kip Fry signed him to. And, I mean, Paul Lee was the same way, because Paul Lee got a good contract from Kip Fry, and his mentality was no manager is worth, you know, I think the time was like $250,000.
No Jew manager, I think is what he said.
Okay. But
yeah.
Yeah. And
I think Paul Lee had that on tape or something too.
Yeah,
or had a, yeah.
Yeah.
Paul was smart.
With Brian, it was, you know, like, if you cut your contract down, I'll push you. But if you want to take the money that's in your contract, I'm just going to job you out until you're worthless. You know, that was basically
right.
what he was told. And it was a big showdown because he was doing jobs regularly. And all the talent pretty much, like, I don't say they backed Watts because they probably, like, personally didn't. But I know Brian was told by everyone, oh, just take the pay cut. And it was just like, fuck this, you know?
Really? I wouldn't have taken the pay cut. Yeah, I would have been the highest paid jobber. I wouldn't have taken a pay cut. I'm very proud of Brian.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't
Yeah,
gonna,
I remember that.
Yeah, I remember going through the whole thing. I remember the whole Watts thing from beginning to end. I mean, it was funny because you worked for Watts, you know, when Watts was Watts. You know what I mean? When, you know, because Watts
yeah.
was a genius. You know, I mean, he was a genius without a
Yes,
genius.
He was.
And you know, I learned an incredible amount from Watts in the 80s. And then in 92 on, you know, the first day he, I mean, he literally just got hired. And then we talked for like 2 hours. And when I say we talked, we didn't talk. I listened for 2 hours. You know how Bill is, right? I mean, I probably
right.
got 5 words in the 2 hours. And I remember the first thing I did was I called up Brian because Brian was a pretty good friend of mine. And I go, Brian, I go, this is going to be a fucking nightmare. I go, what do you mean? And I go, like, I listened to him for 2 hours, and it's like, everything is 1986. And I go, like, I never realized until this conversation how much the business has changed since 1986. And it's just like, it's just a different business. It's just different type of guys, and different stuff gets over. And his mentality is 86. And I go, it's not going to fly.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
It wasn't going to work. It was actually one of the greatest lessons I ever had. I'm so glad about that conversation because it relates to every single generation. You know, when somebody,
yeah,
you know how it is because the business always changes. I mean, this business, the guys.
Thank goodness, it's got to change. It's got to change. It's got to change with the times. You know, I love the current stuff. You know, it's got to change. It can't be the same old stuff because people will get bored of it. You know, you got to change. But my soap operas, they change. And whatever's going on and, you know, currently you got to change with what's going on around you. Pop culture, you got to change or you'll get stale.
All right. Thanks to Brian Alvarez for letting me use that bit of audio from Wrestling Observer Radio that I did with Dave Meltzer on Saturday and Missy Hyatt as well. It was a lot of fun. So before we get to the second part of the show with John and I, talking about Bet Online, sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball finally kicked off. Last weekend, I just watched my Giants go 2-2 against the Dodgers, who should be, you know, maybe the best team in baseball this year. So I fully expected the Dodgers to sweep all four games there. And there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry, a.k.a. Big Shot Bob. See what they have to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. All right, let's talk about some WCW. Saturday night, July 25th, 1992. Were you happy or sad to see that this was only a one-hour show?
Actually, a little happy. I was. I just watched a lot of wrestling, you know, so it was okay. But it also brought me back some little nostalgia because I'm like, you know what? There's probably a Braves game on. Right.
Yeah.
This,
yeah.
Right. So, you know, baseball's just about to start. So I'm okay with it. And, you know, and plus, you know, Watts does a good hour of television. So I was excited to see how good this hour was to like the 2 hour stuff he's been doing. We've been covering. So
and they go back to 2 hours.
But listen,
I looked to make sure.
I was just excited. Because last week we had a missing episode. We found the episode, had no audio. And, you know, we still covered the Bachelor, which is cool. But like, I was happy to just watch this stuff again, and because I knew we were going to talk about it, and I'm pumped, man. Let's talk. Let's get into it.
And I don't think we'll miss. There's no misses for the rest of the year, so we're good.
Yeah.
All right. So, like I said, it's just a 1 hour version of the show. The beginning of the show shows the finish of the Vader Sting match, which is actually kind of interesting because for the longest time, WWE would not show any video from the pay-per-view because they want to sell the replays. And so they would, you know, you would know the result and you would see like stills, photo stills, but you wouldn't see the you know, any finishes or any video of what happened because they want to sell the replay. But for WCW did not care about selling the replay. They're like, here's how it ended. Like this is what you want to know. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, I was really interesting how they edited it down, just the powerbomb. You know, we talked about it last week, and someone talked about it on our group. They're asking about like, oh, you know, him hitting the ring post, and you know, it was kind of weird, and
he explains it in there's a segment with him, and I just thought, you still didn't sell me on it, buddy.
But you know, like, they didn't need that. I mean, I'm not saying Sting politic for to have his own little out, like, you know, for this, because the way he worked that match, I think he was out there to make Vader, right? And for the U.S. market, of course. I mean, he's already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, but with the clever editing, they just didn't show that part. They showed the powerbomb and looked like, oh, man, shoot. I mean, Vader did dominate Sting in that match, but it was really cool what they did. I really like that. They just, right to the point, boom, oh, my God, Vader, Sting got destroyed, and now we have a new world champion.
So Rick Rude is with Jim Ross on this show, and Rude because he is supposedly this, you know, the guy that all the women want to be with. He's got Medusa with him, and I guess Paulie is not with him anymore. It was just going to be Medusa, and you know, he's got to kind of boss her around a little bit. She's his manager, so she's got to book some flights and she's got to get him water.
But
and he's not. I would say he's being a chauvinist to an extent, but when I saw where they were going, I almost closed my eyes thinking, oh my God, I can't believe it. And then it wasn't even as bad as I thought it was going to
be. No, and it wasn't as bad. But at the same time, I was thinking like, well, they're not really getting any heat with this because she's in agreement, right? Like she's like, okay, sure. I'll get you water. I'll get you, you know, stuff like that. And I thought Medusa looked pretty good here, man. I was digging the 90s hair, big old poof, man.
Yeah.
I was drawing back to some memories.
He was calling her Deucey.
Deucey. Oh, man, I got a couple jokes. But, you know, like, I thought she came out with that big hair, and it really stuck out to me. And I was like, oh, man, yeah, bring me back to 1992, baby.
Yeah, like she used to get a lot of crap because, you know, if you were going to compare her to Miss Elizabeth or Missy Hyatt from the looks perspective, yeah, like they're more attractive, like just to the whatever the, you know, the pop, the whatever the hot woman is supposed to look like, they are definitely more attractive. But, you know, she was fit. She had muscles. She was athletic as all hell. And she was attractive. She was attractive in like a more physically fit kind of way. She was like, you know, we used to see these growing up, you know, if you're on watching ESPN at, you know, 6 a.m. or whatever, you'd see Corey Everson's like fitness video and you're like, wow, Corey Everson's kind of buff. Like Medusa fit more towards that. And there's attractiveness in that too. I always dug the fact that she, you know, she just looked like she worked out a ton.
Yeah.
And she was always in great shape.
Oh yeah. She had the shoulders and the arms and the legs. But you know, she was also on a lot of the Zapner magazines, you know, a lot of her pictures of her, especially with the AWA days. They had a lot of like her and her wrestling gear and stuff. So yeah, I liked her combination with Rick Rude. It kind of got lost. Like I think Watts got tired of it or something like that. And they kind of phased it out, but I thought they made a good duo. But this, what was so interesting about this show, cause he was doing commentary on a couple of matches that involved his, I guess now former Dangerous Alliance stablemates. You know, he is not there's respect there, but there's no mention of the Dangerous Alliance at all.
Yeah. Yep. So first match is Barbarian, who we've seen, I think, on like three shows now.
Yep. Don't get tired of seeing the Barbarian.
they're building him up. He faces Randy Starr. Very pretty quick squash, impressive. Everything Barbarian does is strong. And Randy Starr sells all of it, and he just looks like a world beater.
It's funny because I'm doing my own personal rewatch of Mid-Atlantic 1985, and he just showed up recently, and he's wild and crazy and yelling and screaming, and you know he wrestles the same as we see here, but like this Barbarian's more like he's not yelling and screaming, he's not wild. Like I want to see him be more vocal on there, a little more, I don't know, more vicious, I want to say, but I still love Barbie. He's like I said, one of my favorites. I mean, I love the Powers of Pain as a kid. I thought they were so cool. And I love the Barbarian. I love this flying clothes on top rope. The flying headbutt was so awesome. And then, of course, that I just love. I could watch him do that big boot all day to anyone. And sure enough, that replay. Damn, that guy. That much respect to the enhancement talent on that, because he took that good.
So that brought out Ron Simmons. JR did an interview with Ron Simmons. He wants Vader. I think I got this quote right. He says, quote, "That belt knows no man. It will strap itself around the best," end quote. I think that's what he said. I didn't know if I had it exactly, but meaning that the belt is going to gravitate towards whoever's the best.
Yeah, the cream rises to the top, I guess he's trying to say. I think Ron got the word something's going to happen in his career soon, and I think he was a little nervous with his promo. Mm-hmm. It really stood out. I think Jim Ross did his best to kind of keep it together, but I think Ron was a little bit nervous here.
So that led to the match that JR was teasing at the beginning, which I actually thought was going to be the main event, but is actually not the main event. Greg the Hammer Valentine, Stone Cold, or not Stone Cold, Stunning Steve, and Cactus Jack against Dustin Rhodes, Barry Windham, and Johnny B. Badd. I find it so interesting that both Rude and Ross, that the way that, so the Johnny B. Badd comes in 91, he's like one of these new cartoon characters that we were talking about that Dusty brought in, PN News, Johnny B. Badd, Diamond Stud. And so he'd been around. Obviously, he's not a ring veteran or anything. He hadn't been around for that long. But you know, he'd been with the company for over a year. And a lot of the language that JR and Rude, and even in the previous shows, are using is like, he's improving, up and comer. And so as a fan, I remember getting frustrated with this because I was like, but he's been here for like a whole year. And he was like a contender for the light heavyweight title or whatever. Like, so you're telling me that someone who could be a champion or who is a champion also needs so much improvement. Like, I never understood why they talked about him in that way, other than if that, you know, maybe they weren't happy with him. They expected more. They wanted him to do more. Maybe that's kind of what it was. But like, well, what was the reason why they talked about him in this way?
Because I think he's had great improvement in his wrestling ability from 1991 to 1992. Like, he's come a more of an accomplished worker. You know, he was very, very green when he showed up as Johnny B. Badd in May 1991. He's actually did jobs on TV as Mark Mero before that. But then he was taken off TV for a while, and then they found this character for him. But he was like very green. If you remember, like, he had like really, really short matches, and
they just hit the left hook and he's done.
It was when he had longer matches, it was a little bit rough. But like DDP, like Johnny B. Badd, and it's funny because they're kind of married together in 95. With they had some really good series of matches, DDP and Johnny B. Badd, but they both kind of improved like greatly. And you know, I think Mark Maron I remember like seeing that progression of him as a kid. I remember like thinking, oh man, this guy, he's not that good, and this character, you know, the typical, he's a heel, I didn't like him, and I want to see him get his butt kicked. But then he turned babyface, I was like, oh man, he's gonna be a good guy. You know, I don't know about babyfaces, I just know good guys. But then I started liking him, and I started noticing, like, he started adding to his repertoire of moves. He started doing things. All of a sudden, he's adding a Frankenstein on the top rope, a flying head scissors, a a dive out to the floor. Like, he started being really creative and adding to him. So, yeah, I think that's what they're talking about. I think they're mainly talking about his in ring. But yeah, but they would say youngster a lot. So I'm trying to imagine how old he must have been then. But yeah, but I think maybe it's more towards about the in ring.
It's just the idea that, you know, these wrestlers, like, I have no idea how old Johnny B. Badd was, right? Like, in 91, mm-hmm. I had no idea. Like, I didn't know a lot of these guys, except for Dustin, because they would say how old Dustin was. But, like, if someone said Johnny B. Badd's wrestling, and they're like, oh, hey, he's been a veteran for 5 years, I'm like, huh, okay. Hmm. If they said, oh, he's a rookie, I'd be like, huh, okay. Like, I don't really care. And the only reason I even knew, like, it was almost like they were telling me he wasn't good. And I was like, oh, maybe he's not good. Maybe he's not that good of a wrestler. Now I get it. But I just felt like, why would they tell me that? Like, they didn't have to tell me that.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think about his ability getting, he was getting better at this time too. But I just thought that the tag team was hilarious. Like, yeah, these two big Texans, and you had Flamboyant Johnny B. Badd, and but you know, Barry Windham's with him though. He gave him the Oakland A's Bash Brothers. You know, let's do this. Let's get him. I thought this match was a lot of fun. I wish it was longer.
Yeah, it was short. It was way shorter than.
But you know, then that hit me. Oh yeah, it's only an hour, right?
So yeah.
But I liked what we got. I thought everyone did really well. I got a kick out of the Steve Austin Cactus Jack team just because of the book of them riding together, mm-hmm, you know, that mm-hmm. McFoley talked about. So I kind of had like a chuckle about that, and you know, Cookies being in DDP's bed and all that kind of stuff kind of came to me.
Hammer kind of stands out as like, I don't remember him being in WCW at this time for that long. He kind of stands out a little bit to me of where I was like, okay, like I remember all these other guys. I was like, oh, really? Hammer's in this match? I didn't really remember him being in these roles.
Yeah, I think I want to say he's not long though for the company, because I don't remember him in the fall. You know, mm-hmm. I don't. Maybe that will change as we keep watching this. But because he showed up in February or January of 1992. Quickly won the U.S. tag titles with Terry Taylor. And of course, they lost him. And had a really good match, actually, with the Freebirds at WrestleMania 92. So I thought he was, like, a lot more motivated here. Like, I thought
he looks in pretty darn good shape.
Yeah, he was moving quickly.
What I remember.
I know the match was, I mean, it was a quick match. So everyone's moving quickly. But, like, man, I just, like, love those chops. He was just laying in on Dust in the corner. Like, even Jim Ross was like, holy hell. Like, it was so, like, it was like, you know, the typical Hammer chops. And but then Dustin pins him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Dick Slater comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Interference backfires, and Dustin pins Hammer.
Yeah, so they were just doing 2 weeks of promos where Valentine was mumbling something about Dusty Rhodes and how he's gonna beat up Dusty Rhodes all the time, and so I feel like this is kind of like, you know, the end of it, you know, right? Like, Dustin gets his revenge, he gets a clean win over Valentine. What else mm-hmm. does he need to do? So
mm-hmm.
so that's why I'm thinking maybe Valentine's not long for the company.
So Big Van Vader had a handicap match against Larry Santo, yes, and Rob Campbell. And the scary one, though, I think this was saved. I don't remember which person he did this to, but he press slammed somebody to clothesline themselves on the top rope, which I thought was scary. But then they caught themselves really well. I was like, wow, that was really athletic.
Yeah, that was Larry Santo, who's the veteran of the group. You know,
amazing.
So one of my favorite all-time job guys, Larry Santo. Or Santo, I hope so. I always say Santo.
Yeah, Santo is the
lucha
Japanese
legend.
The Japanese way also, like, I guess, yeah, the Mexican way.
Yeah.
But then also, my cousin's last name is Santo. He's Japanese, so.
Yeah. So this was yeah, you know, Vader being Vader, you know. Like, you know what he did? Like, a lot of people, like, you remember the whole, like, Joey Ryan, like, was talking about on Twitter how he's being a bully, and you know, there's someone had a clip of Vader just beating up some job guy, and it's like, you know, this bulliness needs I'm glad this is not around anymore. And the mm-hmm. job guy wrote back like, nah, I worked with him many times, he was safe. And like, and it kind of that whole little discussion stood out to me, because in this match here, like, he, you know, he just hits that big overhand forearm in the corner, bam. bam, right? And it was a solid shot. It was good in the safe spot, but he really nailed him. But the next one was light, and the next one was light. But people were like, "Oh my God, boom!" That's the work of it. You're like, yeah, I'll give you one that's gonna get a reaction. People are gonna hear it. They'll almost probably feel it. It's gonna sound so loud. But then the next couple are gonna be a little lighter. Flair did the same thing with his chops, if you notice too. He would hit that big one, bam, and then the next one he would hit. I mean, he would hit some solid ones after that, but like, you know, he'd always follow up a little lighter, you know, after that. But he wanted that initial, like, oh, like when he hit that chop. So this is pretty cool to see.
And he wins with the powerbomb, and he does that stacked up pin on them. I always liked that the way that he pinned people.
Yeah, it was cool. And I liked when I liked his choke slams. This was how choke slams should be done. You get the guy by the throat, and then you get the guy behind the back of the neck and lift him up and throw him, right? You know, like, I just think all of a sudden it became like people just like lifting with one hand, and and you know, you got Tegan Knox. You know, one of her favorite moves is a choke slam, which drives me insane.
Well, when you only do it with one hand, then the person taking it's got to like grab onto their hand or something, right?
Or so shoulder
could go up, yeah,
shoulder. But like you know, I know Tegan Knox, one of her favorite wrestlers are Molly Holly and Kane, so that's why she does the choke slam. It's just, that's a true story. And I don't understand, she does the choke slam, and I get it. Like, it's cool, you love Kane, but maybe it was cool in the Indies. But maybe we shouldn't do it in NXT. I don't know. But I like Tegan, so I don't want to bag on her. I'm not bagging on her. I'm just saying, you know, it's one of my little pet peeves. When I saw this choke slam, I'm like, oh, man, that's how you do a freaking choke slam. Because he would just throw the dude down. Like, oh, man, that looked vicious. And then all of a sudden, and Razor did the same thing. Razor had a good choke slam, if you remember. Mm-hmm. He would get the guy behind the back of the neck as well and look like he had control over him.
Then he does an interview. And then there is a cool segment with Tony Schiavone and Sting where they're basically going over Sting's thoughts of the match against Vader. Boxing would do this sometimes. Like, there would be a big boxing pay-per-view. Then they would come back to, like, they would show the paper. They would show the boxing match or the closed circuit boxing match, like on regular TV, like the next week or the maybe 2 weeks. And then they would re-interview the fighters and say, you know, what's happening next or whatever. So I thought that this was really good. This was like a real, like a sports thing.
This is my favorite thing on the show.
And it was just so different. Like, Sting, for one, right? Sting was the champ. But, you know, he clearly thought he was the underdog in this match. He's talking about, I needed to get past the first 10 minutes. Like,
yeah.
You know, just the way that he talked about the match, it felt real. Like, it felt like this is how you would talk about your strategy in a match if pro wrestling were real. He's going through, well, I think I thought this. And in times where he maybe couldn't remember, he's like, oh, yeah, I think, you know, I think I was maybe knocked out there,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, no, he
but like
put him over.
So good. Like, Sting was so good here. And
not yelling.
Schiavone was really good, too.
Yes. This is Schiavone's strength. Like, I think he was always a good interviewer. And especially like these sit down interviews. They did a lot before in the past with Schiavone. We sit there with Dustin Rhodes in the empty building talking. And I think Eric Watts, too. We'll probably see later in this year, but he you know, that's his strength, I think, as a backstage interviewer, not necessarily a commentator, especially now. I don't think he's kind of just there to entertain Jim Ross. He was really good. And Sting was explaining everything. I thought everything was logical, why it happened. He was honest. Like, if this is real, he was being honest of why things failed. Like, I know you didn't like his excuse for the you know, hitting his head on the ring post, but like, I thought
when he said it, he's like, I think, you know, I probably went a little high, and then I think I slid on his back, kind of took my momentum, and I was like, oh, maybe that's exactly what happened. And then I watched it, and I was like, No, that's not what happened.
Well, he didn't really lie, but no, I appreciate it wasn't an excuse though. He wasn't saying like I'm using this excuse to that's why I lost. He was just saying like this is an unfortunate thing that happened right in the matchup.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the highlight of the show, and I know a lot of people are actually listening to our show and they're following along with us, which is really cool. I love our discussion about it. Like, I just can't wait to get everyone's feedback on this segment alone because. I was so. Like,
I wonder if this segment is on YouTube, just this segment. Because if it is,
it should be.
Maybe. I mean, maybe it is, but we should post it in the group and see what people.
Yeah, because
think.
My booking mind was like, damn, I didn't do this promo. Like, why didn't I do this when Dylan Drake lost the APW Championship in November? You know, to Malakai. Like, this would have been great if I followed this up with at the next event with some kind of like interview with Dylan Drake. Ah, man, so cool. I love this, and so I think I watched it twice. That's how much I loved it. It was just, this is the stuff I want to see, man. Bring this stuff back.
And then Sting says, for Vader, he's not gonna only take it up one notch. He's taking it up two notches.
That's
so Big Van Vader. Be ready for.
Well, he's like
the
Spinal
Stinger.
Tap. He's like he's he's at 10 all the time, and now he's going to 11. Right now we're bringing it to 11.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So something that I wasn't as happy with was the next match, which was Arn Anderson versus Nikita Koloff. I've had a lot of long Nikita matches. If you watched the Great American Bash. And, the beginning of this match was side headlock city. I will admit, I thought the last couple minutes was fun because you got to see explosive Nikita. Mm-hmm. But the overall match was let's get. I was just thinking, like, I know this match shows only, I think it only comes out to like 40 minutes or something on the thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, I know this thing, we're coming up soon, but this thing just feels so long. But the finish was fun. So, it was
Paulie.
Was it Heyman?
Yeah, he pops up.
Yeah, Heyman interferes.
Or distracts the ref for some reason.
Nikita like had a pin, I think. And then Paulie jumps up and Nikita just punches him, decks him down. And then all of a sudden you see Bobby Eaton come out to like complain about what's going on.
Well, because, he came out to help Paulie back to his feet. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Anderson kind of turns around and then he eats the Russian sickle for the win. So, what they're setting up is a future Rick Rude and Nikita Koloff.
Please, God, please tell me Ivan's going to be here. I love Ivan.
Nikita Koloff feud, which is kind of cool because, I complained the last couple shows about, why is everything about this dumb house show that I can't watch? But this is actually kind of cool because you have Rude out the entire time simply to set up that Nikita's going to be in the main event so he can talk about Nikita. And... I don't know if what they're building towards because Rude is also, they're also building Rude towards PSAs and Rude saying that, you're not going to get me with the DDT. But then they're also setting up Rude and Koloff. So I don't know if it's going to be at the Clash. I don't remember or where they're going to wrestle.
We'll see.
But I was fine with this because it's not like they were saying, tomorrow night at the Omni, we're going to, it was like, no, they're setting up something for the future. So as the viewer, you're like, oh, at some point I'm going to see this. Not, I can't watch this because I don't live in Atlanta.
Well, really, they were setting up for a house show runs, but it wasn't that specific to a certain house show. A couple weeks ago when they're talking about.
And
the
if
Omni.
They came to your town, then
that's what it is. We know it's signed. So that's what you get the they're coming to town. Who's in the card? Oh, Nikita versus Rick Rude. I gotta see that. That's what they've been talking about. I like this match. I like longer. They're wrestling. They're just grinding, and psychology was good. A lot of wrestling. I think Nikita could go. Like, a lot of people don't give him credit. They kind of like people bash Nikita so much. Like, he was just. He was a gimmick, but I thought he was a good wrestler and he improved big time. Like I'm watching him now in 85. And he's still green, but he's like, he's obviously, they're keeping him intact.
Jacked at that time.
He's so intimidating.
Yeah.
He was such a badass dude. I love Nikita and I love the Koloffs too. Like, well, Ivan. Ivan's awesome. And so here, you know, they had a good wrestling match. The finish, you know, Heyman popped up. You know, Koloff hits Heyman, a little bip off the apron, which is my favorite bump. And then, you know, Arn goes for the roll up to get the, you know, like, you know, quick pin, you know, like catch by behind, but then he kicks out, and then, you know, he goes for an elbow, ducks the elbow, and then finally hits a big clothesline. You know, it's cool. The best part was like Rick Rude's like, oh no. Oh, like,
well,
oh.
I thought my favorite part was when Rude kept saying that he was pulling the hair, and Jim Ross is like, and Jim Ross is taking him seriously, like, no, like, I'm looking at his hands, like, they've never ungrasped. Like, what are you talking about?
And Ross made a really bad mistake, and he usually doesn't make this mistake, but he kept, because, you know, Arn's working on the left arm of Nikita, and he kept saying, oh man, he takes that arm out, he takes out a big weapon of Nikita. Nikita hits a sickle with the right arm.
Hits with the right arm.
So I thought that was kind of interesting, and I was a little disappointed that we didn't get some kind of post-match angle with Rude interfering, maybe attacking from behind, or them two just brawling, you know, or, mm-hmm. or some kind of schmoz or whatever. But like, it just kind of ended with a really good promo by Rick Rude. But like, I kind of want to see some, let's add some spice, a little more spice to this Rude and Koloff match.
Okay, so just following up on what's going on in WCW at this time, so. The Bash, the pay-per-view, like you compare 91 to 92, and then this just tells you kind of how far they have fallen. So the Great American Bash 1992 does just over half of the pay-per-view buys as the infamous 1991 Great American Bash. So that's, you know, they're and look, WWE's in a rough spot too. This is not just WCW. But, you know, WCW's doing way better on pay-per-view. So there was this small tidbit, which isn't necessarily a fair comparison, but, and I don't think Dave wrote it to, as anything more than a, you know, this is how wrestling was 7 years ago versus right now, but he compared the original Great American Bash show at the Charlotte Stadium in 1985. They did 27,000 fans for that show, which is is that the Dusty Tully?
Is that the outdoor stadium one?
And well, it's Flair.
It's Flair Nikita.
Yeah. Yeah.
Road Warrior. But Road Warrior is in the Koloffs. I mean, these Road Warriors and the Russians, actually, because there was Crusher Khrushchev and Ivan versus, you know, the chain, double chain match. Yeah. Yeah. It's a big major card.
So they did 27,000 in the stadium. And then in 1992, they ran the stadium again just for a house show, though. I mean, just for the house show tour. And they did 2,000. So
yeah.
Kind of sucked. But, you know, not a fair comparison, because one is a big major show that you're building up to, and the other one.
And plus, they were doing Crockett in 1985 was extremely hot. Like,
mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So that is it for here. We will be back next week with the following episode. And then, after I get married, I'm going to be out of town for a little bit, but I think I could still, I have the stuff to do a show. So I don't think we'll miss a week, but it may be a little bit of a shorter show, to say the least, on some of that stuff. But I'll alert folks if anything changes. I mean, I should still be able to do everything that we generally do. But so for John, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.